What is up, NBA fans? Welcome to the NBA Outlet. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, Corey Waldron. Corey, how are we doing?
Doing good. Talking some New Orleans Pelicans. And it's funny because we may be in New Orleans next year for a little celebration, if you know what I'm saying.
Yes, possible bachelor party. We'll see what happens, though. New Orleans has been a hot topic around the NBA with the offseason, the past season. We'll dive into that, as always. Quick reminder, you can find us on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube. And before we look forward to next year, we'll look back at last year. Pelicans 33-49. Obviously, Anthony Davis requested a trade. In the beginning of the season, it looked like they could be contenders, and then injuries hit, and things just went completely sideways. How would you summarize last year in an emoji?
So if I get to use this emoji for the first time, I know you've used it. It's the angry emoji that's cursing. So obviously the Pelicans were coming off a good year the year prior with some playoff success. And we were expecting playoffs again. And then that didn't come to fruition. And then we had the Anthony Davis forcing or demanding a trade, which kind of put the entire season. Ended the entire season. The minute Anthony Davis requested a trade, the Pelicans season more or less ended. And if you're a Pelicans fan, I'm sure you felt betrayed, you felt annoyed, because then, you know, Davis was also like still wanting to play, but he was only playing like 20 minutes. So it was just a giant cluster mess. It was a mess. So if you're a fan, you're probably like F this team to a degree, maybe not so the whole team, but F Anthony Davis.
Yeah, fans definitely felt that way. I went with the upside down smiley face because the season, like you said, was just a mess. Like in the beginning of the year, they started really hot. You know, Anthony Davis was playing well. Jrue Holiday was playing well. You know, some of the new additions were really popping off. Then injuries hit. Season turned around. Anthony Davis gets hurt, then requests a trade. And then the second half of the season was just all in disarray because, like you mentioned, AD was playing 20 minutes, not playing some games. They were trying to maintain his health and not trade him. So it was just a weird season because you knew what was coming, but it didn't just happen yet. So with that said, what was the most positive thing of last year?
The most positive thing from last year, you could say Jrue Holiday continuing to show that he's one of the best two-way guards in the league. You know, we gave him a lot of credit for the OTG Top 50. We had him ranked 17th. And I know that a lot of Pelicans Twitter, Pelican fans were extremely happy that we were woke, quote-unquote woke, on the fact that Jrue Holiday is underrated. So I think Jrue Holiday being so good and knowing that you're going to have him going forward to be the veteran presence, the leader of this team, it feels good for Pelicans fans who may have felt, you know, that this going forward could have been a loss when you lose a guy like Anthony Davis. But Jrue Holiday is a guy you can trust.
Yeah, he was really good. And I think it goes underrated how good he was offensively. He averaged 21-7, you know, 7 assists from a guy who's not necessarily known for being one of the most dominant playmakers or anything like that, and 5 rebounds, 47% from the field, 32% from 3, which isn't great, but with the other efficient numbers, you don't mind, and a defensive ability. And he was somebody I saw live in person last year. So it'll be interesting to see how his dynamic with this team. I know David Griffin has even mentioned him as being a possible MVP candidate for this year. I think that's a little bit of extra hype. But it should be another big year for Jrue going in as the number one player for the Pelicans. Now, on a negative note, biggest negative takeaway.
I do want to give one more positive. I got to give Jahlil Okafor a shout-out. When Anthony Davis requested a trade and Okafor got a boost in minutes, some starting opportunities, Okafor showed that his NBA career is not over, at least not yet. He definitely got into shape. He definitely has plenty of offensive weapons to his game. The guy can score. The guy's a good rebounder. The defense is still a questionable mark, but I got to give credit to Okafor because it looked like after Brooklyn, he was going to be out of the league, and he definitely saved his career with New Orleans.
Yeah, he definitely had some nice moments. He mentioned about going to a therapist, dealing with some mental issues, and then also just getting his body right. He looked a lot leaner in New Orleans than he ever did in Brooklyn and Philadelphia. So I think that is a nice positive for him, and maybe he can take another step forward this year. But what would be the biggest negative takeaway?
I think the easiest negative, which is what I'm going to go with, is the fact that Anthony Davis, your star player, demanded a trade. Obviously, Davis is a once-in-a-lifetime generational player, a guy who is arguably a top five player when healthy, has the possibility to be a top three player, maybe even the best player in the league once he reaches his prime at just 25, demanding out. It's a pretty crushing blow to a franchise. Obviously, being a Pacers fan, I felt this when Paul George demanded, well, not demanded out, but said he wasn't going to re-sign. So I kind of have a similar feeling to this. Granted, I didn't have someone at Anthony Davis star level demanding a trade and wanting out. But the biggest negative is the fact that you lost a once-in-a-lifetime generational player.
Yeah, and it's the one thing New Orleans Pelicans fans didn't want to hear was AD requesting a trade. It was just, it really hurts. And then when it became a public trade, I think that made it even worse because now all leverage is gone. You're not necessarily getting the best package. They still really did get a great package. But at that time, it was just weird to happen in the middle of the season. And then you had to stick with him for the rest of the year knowing that he wasn't committed to this team. So it's just a really weird situation. But I'll ask you this. Do you think Anthony Davis was in the right for demanding a trade?
Man, he's in the right. I'm gonna say yes. Do I think he went about it the wrong way? Yes, but I think he's in the right. In the player empowerment movement, you know, if you don't get results, this is the route you go. It still felt a little premature because this was a team that we just saw, you know, have some playoff success, and then he was so quick to give it up. And I know, you know, we have a lot of Pelican fans. We have a Pelican podcast as well. And all the guys were pretty adamant that Anthony Davis was going to be a Pelican for life. And I think you and me are more so like, man, like, you, like, I just, like, we were really hard sells on that fact. But I think he was, I think he had every right to. You know, the Pelicans, again, it's tough to bring in marquee free agents to New Orleans. It's tough to get talent around him. And the fact of the matter is, it was Davis and Holiday, and the supporting cast was either constantly hurt or constantly underperforming. And if you're Davis and you're at 25, you're going to be 26, entering your prime, you just don't want to waste years and waste time. So Davis took it into his own hands to control his career and get out of there.
Yeah, I agree. I can't blame him. You know, he gave him 6 or 7 years to try to make a contender. And I don't think it's all on New Orleans for him requesting a trade. I think some of it was just bad luck. You know, you mentioned constant injuries. Then the whole DeMarcus Cousins thing. If Cousins doesn't get injured, you know, the previous season, maybe that team is contending. Maybe you're all of a sudden taken to another level and you have two stars, pretty much three stars with Jrue Holiday emerging at that point, and things are looking really good, and maybe you can make a trade and bring in another piece, and all of a sudden you're looking like one of the best teams in the West. But just things just kept breaking the wrong way for them. And I felt like maybe trading Anthony Davis ended up being the best thing for the franchise, which we'll get to. It's weird to say when you trade a top five player, it's the best thing for the franchise. But with the haul they got and the young pieces they have, it gave them a chance to really retool slash rebuild this franchise and also bring in David Griffin, which is arguably the biggest move for the team.
Yeah, no. You know, obviously, when we talk about the haul that they got and David Griffin becoming the new GM and giving this team a new direction, it's the best case scenario out of a worst case scenario situation.
And I will clarify, because I know Pelicans fans get very upset about this, David Griffin is not the GM. He's the vice president of basketball operations.
Yes.
So Trajan Langdon is the GM, former Nets assistant GM. So shout out to him. But talking OTG power rankings, our staff has them coming in at number 17. Do you think this is too high, fair, too low?
I think it's fair. I mean, there's a ton of young talent on this team, but with a nice mix of veterans on the roster. I could see them being a couple spots lower if they don't reach expectations, but I could also see them being a couple spots higher if some of these guys really take the step forward.
I think, like you said, this is a fair spot, but there's a lot of variables. So they could jump a couple spots, they could drop a couple spots. When you have so much young talent and so many new pieces, you don't really know what to anticipate going to the season. So it'll be an interesting year, and that's obviously why a lot of people are kind of tuned into what's happening in New Orleans. But getting to the offseason, obviously you mentioned the Anthony Davis trade. They also had a great draft, picking up, obviously, Zion Williamson, Jackson Hayes, Nickeil Alexander-Walker. Let's start with Zion. I know that you're not necessarily his biggest fan, but how big is this for the franchise?
Lately I've been a little bit backtracking on my not anti-Zionness, but my concerns over Zion. But this is a freak player. I mean, we've seen it in preseason so far. This is a guy who can rebound with the best of them. What really stood out to me was the performance he had against Rudy Gobert, who we know is a defensive player of the year, a guy who's going to be in that race for a couple of years to come, if not more. And Zion basically made him look weak. Zion pushed him out of the way on some layups. Zion was able to get to the rim on him. And Zion just has a crazy athletic ability. We've never seen somebody at 6'6", 285 pounds, who can move the way he does. He was able to knock down 1-3 in that game, which kind of like, you know, we'd love to give Ben Simmons some shit for not even attempting the three, and Zion takes, you know, his first three attempt and nails it. So I think Zion is a once in a lifetime generational player as well, even though you know, maybe not to the same extent as Anthony Davis, because I think Anthony Davis's game is just a little bit more well-rounded, because I don't think Zion will ever have a jump shot that you can depend upon. But Zion is a guy who can change the entire direction of a franchise. And we've never seen something in Zion because of his athletic ability and just brute strength.
Yeah, he's a really physically imposing player, and I think it was undersold probably going into the draft. When you think of the NBA, there just isn't necessarily a ton of big, bulky guys, not only because basketball is not really a sport based on strength, it's more so a skill and athleticism thing. And guys are, it's almost hard to keep on weight because you're playing 82 games, running up and down the court. You know, a lot of young players have trouble putting on muscle. And this guy already coming in so big, and like you mentioned, having no issue physically, you know, moving Rudy Gobert in the paint and finishing inside is incredible for a rookie. Obviously, it was preseason, but just the taste of what we can expect as he polishes that game, improves the handles, improves the IQ, improves the shooting, he could be a really dominant player for New Orleans. And he's just a mismatch with his size and athletic ability.
No, definitely. Zion is, if you're a Pelicans fan, getting Zion, it made losing Anthony Davis a lot easier, I imagine. Because obviously the number one pick wasn't guaranteed. And everyone knew that if you got the first round pick or the first overall pick, you were taking Zion. And the Pelicans being able to get that pick, it was almost like a weight off the organization and fan base's shoulders, and knowing that you're not going to face irrelevancy getting a guy like Zion.
Exactly. And it just, I mean, they have more nationally televised games this season than they did last year, and they had Anthony Davis and arguably possibly a contending roster when everyone was healthy. And this year, with all the hype around him and the other young pieces, New Orleans is just a major storyline, and it's going to be an intrigue to follow him in his entire career, kind of see how he develops. Does he ever become that top five player, top 25? Where does he sit? So it'll be interesting along those lines. But obviously, Jackson Hayes, Alexander Walker, what do you think about these two?
I don't know a lot about Walker, so I'll touch on Hayes. Hayes is another Texas product, and it feels like if you're a center and you're coming from Texas, you'll probably be good. You're probably going to be good. You can probably block some shots. Last year for Texas, Jackson Hayes averaged 10 points per game, 5 rebounds, shot 72% from the field, 74% from the free throw line. But what you like to see is the fact that he averaged over 2 blocks per game in college. And that's the kind of stuff you want to put alongside Zion, a rim-protecting center, a guy who can get some blocks, can do some of the dirty work. Getting a defensive identity will be big for the Pelicans, and it's going to be what they lean on heavily, and Jackson Hayes kind of fits that mold.
And he murdered somebody in Summer League. I think he had, like, the best dunk of Summer League. It was, like, a real way to build up your hype coming to the NBA season. Like you said, if you're from Texas, you probably can throw down some dunks. You can probably block some shots. And he's a really good athlete for his size.
Yeah, and his nickname is Sideshow Jax, and that's fitting.
I think it actually is really fitting, especially with New Orleans, where he won't be the main attraction, but he'll be a sideshow because of his ability on the fast break and catching oops from guys like Lonzo and Drew.
For sure.
And just a touch on Alexander Walker, like you said, we don't necessarily know a ton about him, but from what I've heard, very similar to his cousin, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, just a guy that's under control and understands how to play basketball and can come in and have an impact already as a rookie.
Now, shooting numbers.
Yeah. And talking about players, and we mentioned they had an array of different trades, from the Anthony Davis trade to trading a draft pick to being able to pick up Jackson Hayes and Alexander Walker, but also they brought in Lonzo Ball, Josh Hart, Brandon Ingram, Darius Miller, J.J. Redick, Derek Favors. Who pops off right off the bat?
Oh, man. I mean, it's unfair for me to pick one guy. But, I mean, like, obviously the package from the Lakers sticks out, whether that's Lonzo, Ingram, or Hart. Like, I just want to talk about a little bit of all three of them. We saw Josh Hart with some knee tendonitis issues last year with the Lakers. Well, this is a guy who's got very good role player ability, maybe even six-man level ceiling, a guy who can play defense, knock down the three. Brandon Ingram is now in a new situation where he can kind of roam a little bit more free. He doesn't have to worry about playing alongside Kobe or LeBron. This is a guy who's going to have his own opportunity finally on a team. And, you know, he's got great length. He's just about knocking down the shot. And Lonzo Ball, you know, a really interesting start to his career, obviously, through 2 years, has dealt with some ankle issues, has the LaVar Ball off the court stuff, the BBB shoe stuff that was a sideshow at times, and now being in New Orleans is a start for a fresh start. Didn't really work out in Los Angeles. Never really got it going, whether it was the health issues or whatnot. But Lonzo may never reach like the Magic Johnson like comparisons that Magic Johnson even thrusted upon him at his rookie year. But this is a point guard who can possibly be the best defensive backcourt with Jrue Holiday alongside of him, and a guy who can play a lot like Rondo in a way. He can facilitate. He can get out in the fast break. He can rebound to a high click. So there's just so much potential in these couple guys. And then you bring in a vet, which I got to mention, you know, J.J. Redick, the guy who's been getting better and better from three and from scoring number-wise as he's gotten older. Obviously, was crucial to Philly. Now he's taking on a more mentor role in New Orleans. And then, of course, Derek Favors, a very solid vet and nice center to have on the roster.
Yeah, I'll start with the veterans. You touched on J.J. Redick and Derek Favors. I thought these two moves were crucial, and this kind of took them from being a rebuild to a retool, because obviously J.J. Redick giving them some much-needed spacing and Derek Favors giving them a veteran big that they need on this roster with obviously the holes they have and the young players. So having these two with the combination of Jrue Holiday, who's left on the roster from the Anthony Davis days, you have a couple vets to work around these young guys. And you mentioned Lonzo, obviously going to L.A., a lot of pressure, a lot of injuries, things just didn't work out. His jump shot is looking a little bit better in New Orleans. If he can develop that, that's what's going to take him to the next level. We know what he can do defensively. We know his basketball IQ, but if he can develop that jump shot, it's going to not only make his game easier, but it's going to make life easier for his teammates because of the spacing he'll provide. And you mentioned Josh Hart, obviously a very nice complimentary piece, provide two-way ability, just needs to get healthy. And Brandon Ingram is somewhat of a question mark. Like, we've seen flashes in LA of how good he really could be. He can be an all-star, but then we've also seen times where he disappears. I like how you mentioned this is his first opportunity where he'll get more touches and not have the pressure of playing with a big-time star that kind of dominates the ball.
Yeah, it'll be important. I mean, this was a crazy busy offseason for New Orleans Pelicans and for basketball president of operations, David Griffin.
I just bringing in all the young talent they brought in. Some teams don't bring in this much young talent in like 3 years of a rebuild, and they were able to bring in all these guys in one offseason. I think it just set the franchise ahead so much, especially after, like we talked about a lot, losing one of the best players in the game.
For sure.
Now, talking players out, obviously mentioned Anthony Davis, Julius Randle, Elfrid Payton, Solomon Hill, Cheick Diallo, Ian Clark, Stanley Johnson, Darius Bertans, Christian Wood. Who do you wish they could have kept? Obviously, they wish they could have kept AD, but that wasn't going to happen.
Right. I mean, I don't even think you really wish you kept anybody for sure, obviously. I mean, there's a lot of guys coming in. But if you're going to miss anyone, it's probably Julius Randle. We saw Randle take a really nice leap last year for the Pelicans, able to average 21 points per game, 8.7 rebounds, shot 52 and 34 from the field. You like all of that, the strides he took offensively. The defense is still a little bit of a question mark. So if you wanted to keep moving forward with the youth movement, Julius Randle wouldn't have been a bad fit to keep. But of course, when you look at what they brought in, you don't really miss any of these guys.
Yeah, I agree. And I think the one thing that rubbed them the wrong way with Randle was he played his best basketball for them when it really didn't matter. Like when, you know, the stats were up after Anthony Davis requested the trade and his defense is a question mark. And, you know, not to say that him and Zion have similar abilities, but I think in terms of the position they play and what they provide in certain ways, you could say, hey, Zion's an upgrade there. Obviously, he's still a rookie. But Julius Randle, I think there is questions, but he can make a jump. I'm okay with not keeping anybody. But before we move on from the offseason, I do have a question for you. Out of Lonzo Ball, Josh Hart, and Brandon Ingram, who's going to have the best New Orleans career?
Lonzo Ball. And that to me is just, it's just easy. I think given how they want to probably run this offense to get out in transition, they need someone to run the show. And I think Lonzo Ball works best with this kind of, weaponry alongside of him, not having to worry about sharing the ball with a guy like LeBron. Lonzo's going to be able to kind of maneuver. Jrue Holiday is a very good off ball. J.J. Redick, we know, is a 3-point shooter. Zion getting oops, Jackson Hayes getting oops, Favors getting worked in the post. I think this kind of team with the weapons around just really suit a guy like Lonzo Ball, who can be a true point guard for your team. So I'm going to go with Lonzo. I think the jump shot, too, it may never be great, but I think given all these weapons, if he gets wide open looks, I'm okay with him taking those looks.
And his numbers weren't necessarily terrible, I believe, from above the break in 3-point shots, and that is where he'll be. But you brought up a great point about the pace of this team and the athletes they have. It's just so suited for his game. He loves to get active in transition, and there's plenty of guys to throw oops in between Zion, Jackson Hayes, and some of the other young guys. I think Brandon Ingram would probably be like a dark horse option because he maybe has the highest ceiling with that body type and the skill set he has, but it's just really unknown if he's ever able to kind of hit that level. Now, moving on to the team in general for next season, what's the biggest team X factor, non-player, non-health?
Biggest X factor for me is going to be progression. And I know that's, somewhat of a cop out, but it really isn't when you have this many young players because you need to see guys like Lonzo, Brandon Ingram, Josh Hart really take steps forward. Obviously, you want to see a good rookie year from Zion. You want to see Jackson Hayes have some nice moments. But the guys who are in their third year, their fourth year, you want to see these guys finally taking steps forward, especially with their bigger roles. And those guys are going to be Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball. You need those guys to show at least all-star ceiling level flashes, maybe even something more. But those two guys in particular, in Ball and Ingram, you really need those two guys to progress.
Yeah, and I think it usually is a cop out with this team. There's really no other option because there's so many young players that are going to be in big roles in this rotation where you just need the young guys to be able to play and take a jump. And maybe if they're not able to play early on, you just want to see the progression throughout the season and know that you have confidence in them becoming the players that you looked at when you first saw their scouting report.
Definitely.
Now, starting lineup on opening night.
For me, the starting lineup opening night would be Lonzo Ball, Drew Holiday, Brandon Ingram, Zion Williamson, and Derek Favors. But given the news that Zion Williamson is dealing with some knee soreness and some knee issues, I'm not sure if he'll be good to go opening night. And if he isn't good to go on opening night, then I would expect to see Brandon Ingram slides like a small ball four, and we would probably see JJ Redick go in and have a smaller lineup.
Yeah, it's a really interesting options for New Orleans. Obviously, I would went with Lonzo, Drew, Ingram, Zion, and Favors. But part of you thinks that JJ Redick is going to start because he's that veteran, and he would provide them with some much-needed spacing.
Yeah.
And it's like maybe you play Drew at three. We know he's pretty much defended, multiple positions. When they matched up with Golden State in the playoffs, they had him defending KD the whole game. So I'm not sure he would hate defending the three, but I'm sure it would take a toll on him throughout the year.
Definitely. Yeah, it's interesting having a guy like Drew who can kind of guard one through three.
Yeah, it is, and it's a luxury. There's some nice versatility there too between Ingram and Zion, but it'll be interesting. And like you mentioned, we don't know Zion's health. He's dealing with some knee soreness. We don't know if that means it's going to be a bigger injury and he's going to miss time. Obviously, that would kind of suck for him and the Pelicans and the entire NBA. But who's your player to watch? Not name Zion Williamson because that would just be too easy.
Right. My player to watch is, I'm going to stick on the Ball tour. It's Lonzo Ball. Everything he said so far this offseason, he's been really candid in a lot of his interviews, talking about, the shoe, for example, being the fact that he would have to change shoes after every quarter in the NBA because they would wear through. And you have to kind of make a correlation between the fact he had to change shoes after every quarter and had a lot of ankle issues. I wonder why. Hearing stuff like that, knowing that he's away from those shoes, he's away from that. The fact that there was just so much pressure and drama in Los Angeles, like it has to affect a young player who is going to be just 22 years old when you constantly hear your name in trade rumors. It has to wear on you at some point in time, especially when you're being brought in and told you're going to be the future. Like we're going to build around you. We want you here long term. And then in a short period of time, you get LeBron and all of a sudden you're expendable. Now knowing that he's in a new location in which he is set in stone, basically, to be the point guard going forward, you don't have to worry about your job security. You don't have to worry about getting moved, at least not at this point in time. I think that benefits Lonzo. And of course, just him getting healthy, having time to be the guy in New Orleans, I think it's just good for a guy like Lonzo. I'm excited to see what Lonzo can do away from all the drama and pressure of Los Angeles because the Pelicans, as we know, is a smaller market, and there won't be as much spotlight on Lonzo this year.
Yeah, a bad game won't necessarily show up on ESPN 100 times like it would in LA. And I think you brought up a great point. Better sneakers just might lead to better health and better play because that's something that's just going to hinder you the entire season. One ankle injury is something that's just going to keep bothering you when you're playing basketball, multiple times a week. Now, I'll go with someone different just to switch it up. I'll go with Brandon Ingram, like we kind of talked about. There's so many variables with him. There's flashes of him possibly being a fringe all-star player, and then next thing you know, he's injured, and then we don't get to see him for a bit. Can he get back to that level this year? Will he find a great fit in New Orleans, or is his game too ISO heavy? So I think Ingram, this isn't, I don't want to say a make or break year, but I think this year will tell us a lot about him.
I mean, especially like you mentioned, when Ingram, before Ingram got the blood clot injury, which I think we should mention is a little bit worrisome to the same degree. Obviously, they're not worried about it at the same degree that it ended Chris Bosh's career,
I
but
think
it's.
his was a little bit of a different situation where it was easily correctable, where the Chris Bosh thing was something that might reoccur again. It also, I believe, happened with Mirza Teletovic, and he that forced him to retire as well. So I think the Ingram blood clots weren't the same situation as Bosh and Teletovic.
Which is a plus, but this all the same, it still concerns me knowing that a player at 21 is suffering from some sort of blood clot injury. Again, something to monitor. But as you mentioned, before this injury popped up, he was balling out. Like there was a 5-game stretch where the Lakers looked like they may have been able to make like a little bit of a playoff push behind LeBron and Ingram being able to find so much offense. Obviously, that ended shortly. But you want to see him pick up right where he took off after the All-Star break.
100%. And we could literally go through this team and probably name 3 to 5 guys and players to watch because there's just so many storylines and exciting young pieces. But worst case scenario for the Pelicans.
Worst case scenario for the Pelicans would be low 30s to high 20s in wins. Maybe this team just completely falls apart. We don't see Lonzo as healthy as I'm hoping. Maybe the guys from the Lakers package don't develop as well. Maybe Zion's knee injury becomes a little bit more serious than we anticipate, and this team ends up being just a little bit lackluster.
Yeah, I would just say they're not good. They're
Right.
just not a good team. I think expectations right now are they'll be not a great team. They'll be pretty good, competitive, but there's a chance maybe they're not good. The young players aren't working out. They're dealing with injury, and maybe the young pieces aren't what you expect, and then none of them are going to be all-stars. And we mentioned Zion already having this knee injury. Maybe his rookie season doesn't go as planned. So I think there is a possibility for the worst case to happen, but on a positive note, best case.
I think best case scenario, this team makes the playoffs.
Yeah.
I'm not totally sure what that record looks like. As we know, the Western Conference, it seems to come down to the final game of the season to decide seeding and decide who makes the playoffs. But I think best case scenario would be a low-end playoff seed, whether that's the 7th seed or an 8th seed. This team gets into their first round, and they probably get a mollywop at one of the better teams, but at least they make it to the playoffs.
Yeah, I think best case is probably making the playoffs. And I don't even know if they would get bodied in the first round. I think if they make the playoffs, they'll just be one of these really annoying competitive teams that are super deep and they'll just like attack you in transition. I don't think they'll win a series, but they'll just make it kind of annoying and difficult, kind of what the Clippers did last year to Golden State. Now, obviously, that's a scenario in a best case and everything works out. And these young guys, it looks like all of a sudden they have multiple future all-stars on the roster. But what's your actual prediction?
My actual prediction is 39 wins. I have them being the third best team in this division, and just missing out on the playoffs. But as you kind of alluded to, as what they would have been if they made the playoffs, this is going to be a tough team. It's going to be kind of like what the Kings were last year, a team that's not an easy out. It's not going to be an easy win nightly to go into New Orleans or to see the Pelicans come into town. This is going to be a team that plays hard every night, and they're going to be tough, and they're going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, I went a little bit less. I went 36 wins, competitive season. At times, it might look like they can compete for the playoffs. I just think having so much youth to depend on will make it hard to make the playoffs. And just a lot of guys with an injury history. Not saying that any of them are gonna, miss a season, knock on wood, but you might see a couple ankle sprains or some knee tweaks or whatever it might be. And then all of a sudden, guys are missing 5 to 10 games. Your rotation's messed up, and these rookies are having to play big minutes. And it's just tough to do in the Western Conference with all the good teams we've mentioned. Now, Corey, how would you rate this team on League Pass 1 through 10?
I gave him a 7.5.
I feel like that's a little low compared to the consensus.
It probably is. It probably is. This is going to be a fun team to watch, though. And it could easily be an 8. I feel like you're probably like an 8.5 if I had to guess. But this is going to be a
You're
team that gets out.
close.
Okay. Well, there we go. They get out in transition. They have Zion Williamson. If Zion's knee is not an issue and he's playing a boatload of games, he's probably in the Rookie of the Year conversation. He probably wins Rookie of the Year, if we're being honest. So seeing him, seeing a healthy Lonzo Ball, feeding guys like Zion, feeding guys like JJ, Drew Holiday, doing what he does on both sides of the court, this could be a team that's extremely fun to watch scoring-wise and defensively. But again, you know, we got to see how some of these young guys develop. But I think there is a lot of promise in watching the Pelicans this year.
Yeah, I probably am drinking some Kool-Aid. I'm at a 9. I think there's just like, I enjoy teams that play at a really fast pace and score a lot. And there's just a lot of great athletes on this team, but there's also defensive ability. And then Zion is pretty much a must watch rookie. And then we mentioned all the other young players that could really pop off in New Orleans. So I just think there's so many different storylines and narratives and just development of guys where it's like, okay, I want to catch this every night. And they're not quite one of those elite teams where it's going to, you have to worry about blowouts. It feels like this is a team that's going to be in close games most nights.
Definitely. No, it's going to be a good year to be a Pelicans fan. Honestly, like, I can't stress that enough for how low Pelican fans probably felt in the middle of last year to how they felt now. It's got to be a night and day difference.
You could argue they had some of the worst young talent in the NBA if you don't consider Anthony Davis a young piece. Obviously, still not that old. But no real, like, big young pieces last year. And then all of a sudden you have, like, 5 to 6 pieces that you were really excited about.
Definitely.
What TV show would you compare to this team?
So, for me, the team I picked for this... I picked Better Call Saul.
Okay.
It's not as good as Breaking Bad. It's not as good as a series that has some definitely known stars in it. But it's still very good. It still has some promising characters in it. It's still enjoyable to watch. There's still some very fun moments. It's still got the same type of vibes as Breaking Bad. Maybe not as good, but it's still going actively right now on TV. I think it just got confirmed for another season. So there's still a lot of promise in the show itself. It's won awards. So it's a solid watch. It's a solid show. And that's what I think the Pelicans will be this year.
Yeah, I like it. I think it's a pretty good show. At first, I thought it started a little slow, but then I started to get into it a little bit deeper. I went with Game of Thrones. Obviously, I'm pretty high on the Pelicans, but also so many different narratives, so many different storylines. Same thing with Game of Thrones. It's like you're following 5 different storylines at the same time, and then they're all going to connect. And that's kind of what New Orleans is hoping. All these young pieces are finally going to connect, and it's going to have a great, I don't know the word I'm looking here, a great finale on like Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
But Corey, anything else you want to touch on in New Orleans?
I would say... Which we should just touch on the Zion Williamson knee soreness briefly, just for 2 seconds. We don't know whether or not it's serious. We're not saying it's serious. There are some rumors that it could be serious, but are you concerned at all for the fact that we have already seen in 2 occasions in summer league and now in preseason that there is soreness to Zion Williamson's knee?
I think it probably is a little concerning, and it's something they're going to have to monitor. I would say if there's an easy way to fix it, it might be for him to lose some weight. And I'm not saying he's overweight or he's fat, but he might actually need to just like reduce the muscle on his body because it's just so much stress on his knees to explode like that on an 82-game basis.
Yeah, that's how I feel, is the fact that a guy who puts so much power onto his legs, uses his legs for so much, similar to what we've seen, you mentioned this off wax, you know, what we've seen with Derrick Rose, for example, guards who are really explosive and use their lower body. You know, that's what Zion does, but to a larger extent because it's 285 pounds on those joints that he's constantly leaping large amounts with. So how his body handles that going forward is a little bit of a concern. I'm not obviously, like, I'm not saying, like, this is something that we should all be panicking and pressing the red button and throwing up red flags, but it's a little bit worrisome to see a guy so young already having 2 knee soreness issues this early.
And like we mentioned, he's a player we've never really seen anybody like him with that type of explosiveness. So it's going to be something different for the Pelicans to worry about. I also would just throw out there that New Orleans might be a low-key, like, dark horse team to make a blockbuster trade. Like, they have a lot of draft picks. They have a lot of young assets. Obviously, you can't necessarily have all of these young pieces work out on your team. There could be a possibility for them to make a splash trade if one does pop up.
Definitely. No, I think there is certainly a chance to move, like, a J.J. Redick if you really wanted to. To a contender maybe who needs 3-point shooting, or even a Derek Favors who, you know, was really useful to the Utah Jazz for a lot of years because he gave them a security blanket in case anything happened to Rudy Gobert.
Yeah, and I honestly think it also could go the other way too, where I think New Orleans is close to a playoff spot. They have all these draft picks. They have all these young pieces.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, maybe we bring in a fringe all-star or maybe a young talent, like somebody who is looking you know, take that next step in their career and possible free agent this summer. And New Orleans is like, okay, we'll take them now and we'll pay them in the summer. You know, there's been a couple of shooting guards mentioned that they might not be happy with their situation, but we'll save that for another outlet. Corey, always a pleasure. Big thanks, everybody, for listening. Check us out on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, OTGBasketball.com, Google Play, Dash Radio, and YouTube.
Peace out, knuckleheads.